The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to another edition of the Pride and Trait podcast, live here on the Locker Room App, where we take questions from our listeners, viewers, whatever you want to call them, on the Locker Room App, available now on Android in beta. So if you ever want to join one of these sessions, we run them on every Saturday morning, usually around 10:30 Eastern. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I am the editor-in-chief at Pride of Detroit. With me, as always, for these Locker Room Q&As are two of my best friends on Pride of Detroit. Ryan Matthews is with us at Ryan_POD. Ryan, how you doing, buddy?
Reconciliation, my friend. It's great. What a wonderful Saturday morning. I'm sorry I missed last week. I'm ready to be back and talk Lions football.
Yes, I'm excited to have you back. You are a welcome addition to this podcast. I'm just trying to affirm you as much as I can right now. The other voice that you will hear shortly is the managing editor over at Pride Detroit, Eric Schlitt, at Eric Schlitt on Twitter, with a K and an L in there for those that are trying to find him.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. All right, so mini camp has wrapped up at Allen Park. There's one more week of OTAs, which will not be covered by the media, so we are kind of in the void between mini camp and training camp, but we are willing to ask you answer any sort of questions that you guys have. And the cool thing about this app is you can literally join the show, just like Daniel, who will be our first caller. Daniel, are you there?
I'm here. Hey guys, how's it going?
Good, hey, man.
Hey, I'm really, you know, I know that they don't put on pads in the OTAs, but what I'm really curious about is what I think we're looking at are maybe the strengths of the team, which is the offensive line. And I think, you know, we're still a little bit unclear what's going to happen at right guard. And then how that strength of the offensive line is going to play into the running game. And maybe we have some, I gather maybe there are some things that the coaches have talked about that they don't really want you to talk about, but maybe you could give us an idea of where things are going with, might be going with the running game this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and it's kind of the ironic part about OTAs and minicamp is that's really the one thing that we don't really get to see much of. We heard the offensive coordinator talk about it. We've heard the head coach talk about it. It's just like they're really using the running backs other than individual drills in the passing game, and they kind of thrived at that during minicamp. But I think we all kind of agree that the strength of that offense might be the running game, and we haven't really gotten a good look at it yet, have we, Eric?
Yeah, it's just speculative at this point, right? We did get a chance to look at the offensive line a little bit closer, but like Daniel said, without pads, it's hard to really ascertain exactly what you have beyond, you know, movement. You know, how are they moving? How are they engaging? Hand placements, you know, things like that. We're not actually seeing contact. And so, you know, you're just kind of projecting and hoping for the best. I do think right guard Vitae is very much the leader. Based on the short little stints that we've had and looking at kind of like how they use the rotation at practices, it sure seems like Vaitai has been with the ones pretty much consistently. Yeah. And with Crosby being absent for OTAs, it's possible that he just hasn't got enough time to work himself into the competition yet. But I think they're pretty comfortable with the starting five that, you know, we've been seeing throughout these practices.
Yeah, and I even asked Tyrell Crosby if they had conversations about moving him to guard, and he kind of just gave me the I'll do whatever they ask me, but it didn't really sound like those talks had started or progressed in any sort of meaningful way. And so I expect him to really be at that tackle position when we come back for training camp.
It's the same answer he gave 3 years ago when I when I asked him the same question.
Right. Yeah,
all the coaches seem to like him at tackle, and I think it's a valuable spot.
You have something in there, Ryan? I heard you jump in there.
Yeah,
for a second.
I was just gonna say, greater chance of Tyrell Crosby moving the guard or getting traded?
Getting traded, I think. I don't think it's particularly close.
Well, what's ironic is I disagree. I think he's a valuable piece, and while I don't believe in the trade market, that there's a big trade market for him, and so if there's an injury that happens, I could see him slipping in at guard.
The one other thing I wanted to say about the running game is I feel like anytime anyone brings up the running game with Anthony Lynn, he gets very defensive about it because there's the perception out there that he's like a very run heavy offensive coordinator. And so every single time anyone like makes a reference to that, says something like, I think the Lions are going to run the ball a lot this year, he makes sure to point out, like, look at my track record as a head coach. Look at my track record. Well, he only had 1 year as an offensive coordinator, but like, we threw the ball a lot. We played to our strengths. If our passing game was going, we're going to pass the ball a lot. If our running game's going, we're going to run the ball a lot. It's going to depend on really how things shake out in camp.
His 1 year as an offensive coordinator in Buffalo, they led the league in rushing. The very next year as a head coach with the Chargers, they led the league in passing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So like, he's very flexible and he prides himself.
But what do we know about there's been a little bit of talk about how they might be using DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams a little bit in different roles. And I'm just wondering if we have any kind of sense of what they're thinking and how this might fit into the bigger scheme.
Yeah, I mean, well, he talks about the whole like A back and B back thing where they clearly view Jamal Williams as more of a between the tackles bruiser type guy, and DeAndre Swift is more of a guy that they can get into open space. But I think the thing I learned most in OTAs and minicamp is that Jamal Williams catch the ball pretty well. He can shake a little bit, and he can work a little bit in space. And Anthony Lynn said that too. He says they both got a little bit of both in them. But I think, I don't think that means that DeAndre Swift isn't going to run between the tackles, and Jamal Williams is going to get more carries or anything like that. I just think when it comes to situational downs, in a third and long situation, Swift is more likely to be a target, and a third and short situation, maybe Jamal Williams is more likely to be the target.
Not that it'll be a primary thing, but just, do you guys get a sense at all that maybe like Swift could be motioned out, and maybe you'd see Swift play a little bit more like slot receiver or something like that, whereas maybe Jamal Williams is going to be more of a passing threat out of the backfield?
I think they want them to be interchangeable, and that's the 1A, 1B kind of concept, right? When they first said 1A, 1B, I thought they were just like saying, hey, they're both capable of being starters, but I believe that they're trying to make those two interchangeable so that the defense doesn't know if they're going to run or pass, regardless of which one of them is on the field. Right. And while Jeremy said there are going to be some nuances where Jamal will be better in a certain situation or Swift will be better in a certain situation, I think they're trying to make them interchangeable. And I do think that includes being able to flex one of them or both of them out into slot type positions, as well as catching out of the backfield. They've really, with no contact, they've really shown that both of these guys can hurt you in space and can catch the ball pretty consistently.
Yeah, and it's hard to tell from practices how often they plan on doing something like that, because it's literally all they can really do right now is have them either lined up out wide or in the backfield and run around from there. But they did it a lot, I will say, in the past couple of weeks. Just not sure if that was out of necessity or part of their actual plans.
But look at it this way. They did it so often, and they were so wildly successful with it. If they don't do it, that'd be a red flag to me, because they've shown that it can be, it's a valuable asset.
Right. I agree. All right, Daniel, appreciate the questions, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, let's move over to Nick is next. Nick, how you doing, man?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
How you doing? Good, good.
Good, good. Coming in from satellite internet here at 4,000 feet, so we'll see if it works.
So far, so good.
Good, good. One of the knocks on Goff, you know, before he got on the team was that he couldn't throw the 50-50 ball, couldn't throw into sort of contested situations and needed separation. Have your observations at all played that out? And if so, what does that mean for someone like Quintez Cephas even making the team, or Sage Surratt making the team? What does it potentially mean about how Hockenson might be used in the offense?
You want to start with that one, Eric?
Yeah. You know, at certain points of practice, they have been focused, you know, on like red zone type work and only working within like a certain yard and distance. So we haven't gotten a whole lot of exposure to the deep ball outside of OTAs a couple weeks ago. So it's hard to really, with the small sample size, say if there's any, you know, to make any sweeping judgments about the deep ball. What I can say, though, is that he has been establishing a rapport with certain players, and Hockenson being the one that he's been establishing, I'd say, the most rapport with. Hockenson's ability to go really anywhere on the field and has been a real asset for Goff, and he's been pretty consistent about getting him open. Guys getting separation is definitely an advantage, and it's something that we've seen him need in game situations. But Quintez Cephas has been having a heck of a camp, spring camp, and so he's very much put himself in the mix for this wide receiver rotation. I think he's probably caught more touchdown passes than any receiver that I saw, and so I do think there's a role for Cephas, and you know, there's going to be an opportunity for Hockenson when he can't get position or when he can't get separation, because these guys are good at you know, positioning themselves, you know, like boxing out like in basketball and whatnot. So I do think there are some players that, you know, aren't elite separators that are still going to be able to be worked into the offense.
Yeah, and I would say from my observations, you know, they started to do a little more one-on-one stuff, which occasionally would mean a deep ball. And I found Goff to be okay. I mean, I guess inconsistent would be the best word for it. And I mean, it's a deep ball. Like, you're not going to hit every throw, so not all that surprising. The one thing that I saw Goff really thrive at, and really this was kind of true of all the quarterbacks, was a lot of up the seam work, especially in the final couple days of minicamp. They really seem to attack that seam a lot, especially with the tight ends, Hockenson being one of them. And I completely agree with you that he seems to be very focused on developing a rapport with Hockenson. Now, when you're working the seam during minicamp and there's no contact, you know, a lot of times those are plays that get broken up by a big hit from the safety. So, you know, you can't draw too much from it, but I think that's maybe something to watch, you know, instead of maybe working the outsides with corners or with wide receivers like Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay, who can go up and get it. They might try to a little more to work the middle of the field with those bigger bodied guys.
Well, cool. And I know that there were, you know, some observations that Jelani Tavai went off the Matt Patricia diet and on the Dan Campbell diet. And I'm just wondering, have you any updates on whether he's moving any better? I know there's probably just a limited sample size on that, too.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely notice it out there. I mean, you can notice it in how he looks. You can notice it in how he moves. He's still, you know, not the quickest guy out there amongst the linebackers, but it's a significant difference. It's not. I don't think it's just kind of off-season hype. It's certainly not your normal, like, I'm in the best shape of my life offseason talk. It's a significant difference. And, you know, I did see him at least on a couple occasions really stick with DeAndre Swift a couple times, and that's not an easy thing to do. There was a goal line drill where he ran an angle route, and you could hear everyone on the sideline knew it was coming too. Like, the defense was literally screaming out, "Swift angle, Swift angle." And you know, I noticed, you know, Tavai really stuck with him and you know, forced Goff to look elsewhere on that play. So, you know, it's still very early, and I'm still moderately skeptical of him suddenly being a sideline to sideline linebacker, but he's certainly trending in the right direction.
Yeah, the thing with Tavai. Yeah, the thing with Tavai I was going to say is just his intangibles are really what I think is going to have to separate him. No matter how much weight he actually loses and no matter how much faster he gets, he's going to make this team on his ability to see it and read it before it happens, where, you know, he's not the lack of or lesser athleticism isn't as exposed.
So is the defense scheme simpler? Going to, you know, you think he's going to be able to understand it? Are there changes they're going to make it so he'll be able to anticipate what's going on? Because I think communication was a problem, or teaching was a problem, with the last coaching staff.
Well, yeah. It's simpler. Ahead. No, I was going to say, in the last system, he's asked to read two gaps, and in this system, he's asked to read one. So right off the bat, his responsibilities are scaled back, right? But he still is going to have some challenges to overcome. But from a mental standpoint, I think he'll be at a better advantage in this scheme as opposed to the last one, which asked him to do a lot more.
Okay. Cool. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for the question, Nick. We are going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll be answering more of your questions about Lions minicamp, more about the offseason ahead, and maybe a little bit more about the Lions season ahead. So stick with us here on the Locker Room app. We'll be right back.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward travel guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back with our Q&A here on the Locker Room app, answering all of your Lions-related questions. Let's get back to it because we've got a lot of people on the line. Let's start with Tyler. Tyler, are you there?
Hello? Can you guys hear me?
Hey, yep. How you doing, Tyler?
Hey, I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good. So I just have a quick question. I feel like every team usually takes the identity of one side of the ball. Like, sometimes the offense is the identity, sometimes the defense. If the team has a really strong defense, they kind of are the identity. So I'm kind of curious, what are the early indications on which side of the ball might be the identity for this team in 2021? Like, I feel like previously mostly because the defense was just so horrid in the last regime that the offense was kind of the identity. But obviously there's a bunch of new faces on both sides of the ball, so I'm not really sure which side is kind of going to take that front. So just curious your guys' opinions on which side might kind of take that.
Ooh, I hadn't really thought about this, so I like this question a lot. Ryan, do you have an opinion on this one to kick us off here?
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to this idea of identity, it's really predicated on talent and where is the talent. And right. I think for the Lions, the talent that they have that keeps on getting talked about and referenced to, and, you know, Jonah Jackson said that they could be one of the best units in the NFL. It's their offensive line, right? So mm-hmm. I think that combine that with what they have in their backfield, and I think you're looking at a Lions team that's going to – their offensive identity is really going to be controlling the game. You know, their defense hopefully takes a hopefully takes a leap in 2021. It won't have to take a sizable leap to be much better than it was a year ago. But I think that for the Lions, it's really going to be keeping the ball in their hands and trying to keep the defense off the field. So I think that's what ends up happening, because even as Tyler just mentioned, the Lions hired a defensive minded coach back when they hired Matt Patricia. And it was funny, during his entire tenure here, the Lions were only really able to muster up anything when the offense was doing good things. It really wasn't the defense that was keeping them in games or doing very much. So I think that idea of identity is really, again, just predicated off talent. And that's where I see the most talent kind of situated on this team right now, is in their offensive line and their running back group.
You agree, Eric?
Yeah, I agree. It's from a talent perspective, they're farther along on offense, and so that'll probably be the identity. And then, yeah, who knows what happens when the defense develops if things shift. But you've got really high energy coaches. You've got on offense, you've got really, you know, on offensive minded head coach, and so everything seems to point towards the offense being the catalyst, at least in this first year.
Yeah, I don't know if the identity is going to be as simple as just offense versus defense, because I mean they also invested a lot in the defensive line this year, right? They trade for Brockers, they draft two guys on day two, they re-sign Romeo Okwara. So I mean, I don't know if it was intentional or not. I kind of don't think it was. It's just kind of the way things worked out. I just feel like this team is working through the trenches, and like that to me feels like what their identity is going to be. It's just kind of like the gritty, you know, hard nosed team that's trying to, you know, out muscle you. And you know, to be fair, they're trying to get fast too, but it just so happens this year they did the most work in the trenches, and I think that might be their identity, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think Eric brings up a good point. Like, that identity is likely to shift. Like, yeah. And it could shift, and maybe not likely is the right word, but it could shift just as easily. So that's the fun of it, though.
True. All right, appreciate the question, Tyler. Let's move on to our next caller. Mathis is here. What's up, Mathis? Are you there?
Hello?
Hey, there you are.
Hello?
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you guys.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So I guess to me, what do you, I can't remember exactly if you guys talked about this, but one of the things that's kind of looking like an interesting position is the linebacker group, because now with Tavai, he's lost weight and people are saying he looks better. He's looking a little bit better. I think if he can show something on special teams, that has to increase the chance that he makes the team. So do you guys think that how many linebackers do you guys think they're going to carry? And do you think how do you think that's going to play into the defense? Like the 50 and for the 53.
Right. I want to throw this one to Eric because special teams was mentioned and he's a big special teamer.
Yeah. Look,
have you seen Tavai out there? I'm trying to remember if I've seen Tavai in any sort of specific special teams role. I know he's been out there. I just don't remember what exactly he's doing.
Yeah, I haven't seen him as a protector, and that's right. Really where I've spent a lot of my focus during those special teams drills. But I do think there's going to be a role for him. Like, okay, here's the thing: when you run the players through the drills, right? And we talked about this the other day. You don't typically have to put too much weight, like on the order of the of the players that go through the drills. Like the first guy that goes through isn't necessarily going to be the guy that makes the team, or the second guy or third guy, right? It's not like you're putting your first line out there through these drills first, but you typically put the first guy out there that you know is going to do the drill properly as a model for the rest of the players. And Tavai was always the first guy out there during the linebacker drills, and that holds a little bit of weight for me, because that tells me that the coaching staff the coaching staff trusts him to be able to do what they're trying to get done out there. Now, when they go out into 7-on-7s, it doesn't he's not necessarily with the ones or anything like that, but he's typically out there with the twos. And so I do think that there's a spot for him. You know, if they're going to keep, I think the maximum off the ball linebackers they would keep is six, right? And six is a little bit heavy, but if they kept five, I still think he would be in within that five, right? Collins and Anzalone seem like the top two. Tavai and Barnes seem like the next two guys. And then Reeves-Maben has been in that mix. Deion Hamilton's been in that mix. But Reeves-Maben is a terrific special teamer, so he probably has a little bit of an advantage over Hamilton. And then the younger guys like Beckett and Pittman haven't been bad either. I just don't think they're at the level of the other six. So my guess right now is that Tavai is probably linebacker three until Derek Barnes passes him.
I think, yeah, I think that's probably fair. It's really been interesting in camp, because during 7-on-7s, we haven't seen much of Derek Barnes since he, I would assume, suffered some sort of injury during maybe the first week of OTAs or somewhere around then, maybe even rookie minicamp. Jamie Collins also hasn't played much in 7-on-7, so we've really gotten a look at a wide variety of guys, and you're right, like, it's been Alex Anzalone is probably the most common person out there with the ones, and then I would say sometimes it's Tavai. I think I saw a little bit of Sean Deion Hamilton with the ones on Thursday, I want to say. So they're really getting a look at everybody, and I can't say necessarily there are specific players that have stood out more than others, but it's going to be an interesting competition once you get down to that fourth, fifth, and sixth spot, if they plan to keep that many guys out there.
Yeah, looking back at my notes, when they did their goal lines on 7-on-7, it was Anzalone and Tavai, or Anzalone and Collins. Those were the guys that typically started off the 7-on-7s.
There you go. All right, appreciate the question, Mathis. That's definitely, again, I think a position that we're going to be giving a lot of attention once training camp rolls around.
Hey, thanks, guys.
No problem. All right, Ryan, you're next. How's it going, Ryan?
Good. How are you guys this morning?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Yeah, sorry, Ryan. this question's a bit off course from what's been asked previously, but I'm still curious as to what you guys think. A couple months ago, Rod Wood took a question that asked him if there was any plans to redesign the jerseys for the upcoming season, because I think the 5 years are up. And he said no, which is a logical answer, since we don't really have some big ticket names to sell the jersey to just common fans. So my question to you guys is, as a fan, what would you like the new design to look like? What would you keep on the current ones? What would you change? Or would you go off the board and say, go back to the old black and blue numbered jerseys?
Ooh, the black jerseys have come up. I think I know where both of you stand on them, but I do want to investigate that. Before we get into it, just to clarify, I believe their 5 years is up next year. Okay. And I think Rod Wood said something like, we had mentioned it, but we haven't really gotten into any sort of details of whether we might do that, but yeah, I like the off course questions here. So we'll go to you, Ryan. What's your take on the Lions' current jerseys and maybe an ideal jersey for them?
Okay, so this might be an unpopular take, because black is a very popular color amongst Lions fans, but black is not one of the Lions' colors. Mm-hmm. Like that was a Matt Millen thing, which. You know, Raiders roots, I get it. I don't know. There was kind of that phase where, like, every team had an alternate black jersey, right? Like, like in every sport. So, I get it. But if the Lions are going to do anything, go back to your Honolulu blue and silver. not the gray, not the gray tracksuit that they wear for their alternate uniforms, but like actual silver, and you know, blue, silver, and white, like they're classic, iconic colors. Just go back to some scheme like that, and for God's sakes, make the numbers visible.
Yes, put a black trim around them or something. Yes. Like if you want to put black in the jersey, put it on the trim of the numbers. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one other thing that I would be pleading for is obviously white tops with blue bottoms. It's the best look.
Eric, that you ran a campaign over at Lionswear saying those were unlucky jersey combinations. What do you have to say about that?
I think the last regime was unlucky.
Yeah, I wrote. I don't want to say it was a satire article, but it kind of was a satire article. Basically, yeah, there was a series of games where they had like four or five games in a row where they wore the blue pants that they just like got smoked or had bad luck at the end. And so I wrote an article that was like, please just burn the blue pants. and I'd looked into it because I talked to the I talked to somebody in the building that had said that the team had noticed that, and that's what got me kind of researching down the field on it. I don't really have an issue. I think it's a fun joke, honestly, like I'm just not a big jersey guy, so I can't weigh in really on this a whole lot. It's just one of those things that
it matters so
I can't
much,
take
Eric.
A side. There's something. I mean, look, I get it. People love it. There's a lot of aspects of football that so many people love that I could care less, and I'll take the ribbing for it. I don't care. It's all right.
Do you own a Lions jersey?
Yeah. Sorry.
Go ahead, Ryan. Ryan, you answer that. It's more important what you say.
Yeah, I own the era when they had Sue, the one where they redesigned all the font. I did hunker down, and I bought that black one with the blue numbers that they never wore, where earmuffs.
Oh, the
Eric
color
Ebron,
ones?
Yeah. Nice. The ones that they never got to. So, I was just curious to hear what you guys had to say. I'm 100% on Ryan's side. I think going back to the lighter colors where the numbers are actually legible from watching TV. I did see a picture of Barry Sanders wearing those jerseys, and they had the cage that was blue as well. I know they have the gray right now.
Right.
So I'm wondering, do you think they would ever go back to that or just throw that to the side?
That's an interesting question. I guess I've never really considered the face mask color all that much, but I don't know. Ryan, do you have an opinion on face mask color? I guess I don't really have an opinion on face mask color.
I feel like this is kind of where I draw the line.
A bit tacky.
I don't know. I mean, whatever. It's fine. Just win some football games. Like, you know what I mean? But I will say the one other thing that I would just, I mean, let's just lean all the way into it. Can we bring back the circus font? The circus font is incredible. Like, modernize it in a way. Modernize it, but it's so fun.
I did like the circus font. I remember I used to have bed sheets that had like every team name, every team helmet, and the team font on it. And I fell in love with that circus font. It's weird though, right? Like, I don't know how you make that modern. It by its own admission, it's old school, right? Like, circuses don't even exist anymore.
Wait, Lions, we're playing a football game. Right, that's a deep joke.
All right, appreciate the question, Ryan. I think we took
off the rails. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Thank you. All right, thanks, fellas. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. All right, let's move on to our next caller. CJ is on the line. CJ, how you doing?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
Hey, question for you guys. First one is regards to the running back room. Or not the running back, the tight end room. I know past Hawkinson, I was wondering if you had any observations regarding that. And then also for training camp, what's the capacity going to look like, or if they're going to allow fans, if you guys have any insight on that as well.
Sure. Let's start with the tight end question. Eric, do you have a guy that stood out to you other than Hockenson there?
Yeah, Fells is the clear number two, right?
Yep.
You know, he's talking about how his value as a blocker can help free Hockenson up even more, and then going on to talk about helping him with his touchdown celebrations and whatnot, right? Like, Fells is your ideal number two. He's comfortable in that role, and he should be really good in that role. The three, though, that was the real question, and I think coming out of spring ball, the leader in the clubhouse has to be Elise Mack. He's the guy that has consistently shown up as that third guy. And could one of the other guys step up? Sure. You know, they're still kind of looking for that Josh Hill replacement, right? You know, a guy who can be a hybrid tight end slash run fullback. But if Kabinda's making this team and his special teams stand out and there's a role for him, then maybe, you know, you don't need a guy like Hill, and then you take a more traditional guy like Mack. But I still think it's up in the air. Mack seems to be the leader in the clubhouse, though.
Yeah, I'm with you. And really, I saw all these guys make plays. I'm trying to think. Yeah, Jake Hossman, number 40, I saw him a lot out there, and some good, some bad. But I think that, I mean, the one part about tight end that we don't really know about yet is the blocking, right? And that's going to be key, because they need someone. I mean, they know Darren Fells can do it. They know he basically said that's going to be his role, as you said, like, that's his role. But with no contact, who else fits that category? And I don't think there's anyone else really on the team that has proved that they can do that consistently. A bunch of young guys haven't really had that opportunity, and usually in college you're not really asked to do that as much. So I don't know. Do you have a feeling on one of these guys that might be able to be that kind of two-way player, or maybe even just more of a blocker?
Yeah, I think, I mean, as far as like a your traditional fullback, like out of the backfield by type blocker, Kabinda is the guy, and I think, right, Fells is the most natural of the tight end blockers.
Right.
The other guys, I do think it's too early, just because we really haven't been able to see it. Hausman, I think, can be a two-way player, which could help him. You know, I think Wright is athletic enough to be that, but is he? I don't know. The other guys, they're all kind of flyers right now, because if one of them shows up and they have that ability, then great. You know, Hausman is wearing 40 for a reason. You know what I mean? It's not just because they ran out of 80s. They gave him 40 because he's a guy who could be that type of, you know, hybrid player. And I think right now, if Mack was going to be challenged, I agree with you. Hausman is probably the next closest guy.
All right. Appreciate the question, CJ. We are going to take our next break. When we come back, we're going to answer more of your Lions questions as we close out our locker room session right here on the Locker Room app. And we are back for segment three of our Lions Q&A session here on the Locker Room app, answering all of your Lions questions all through the offseason. Let's move on to our next caller. We've got Tom on the line. Tom, how you doing? Are you there, Tom? There you are. Can you hear us, Tom? Oh, he left. All right.
Can I pause you for a second?
Yes.
CJ had a second part to his question that we didn't answer. He asked about training camp.
That's right.
From what we gather, fans are most likely going to be allowed at training camp. And I don't think it's been made official yet, but the plan is, just like the Ford Field is expected to be open at full capacity, I believe it's the same with training camp.
Yeah, usually I think we get that announcement towards late June, at least in terms of dates and things like that. Nothing has been released publicly in terms of dates or openness or anything like that. But I do get the sense from the feeling around camp and from, you know, basically what we've heard, that things are certainly trending in that direction. All right, let's hit up Dom. Dom is on the line. Dom, are you there?
Yep. Can you guys hear me?
Yep. Loud and clear, man.
Awesome. So let me start off just by saying I'm obviously drinking the Kool-Aid.
I love the new coaching staff, and I think the rest of the division is actually a lot worse than or a lot closer to us than we may have been saying. I think Aaron Rodgers leaving the division is obviously the biggest thing. But I don't think the Vikings defense got a lot better. Their O-line got worse, and Dalvin Cook, he is their offense, and last year was the first year he stayed healthy. So the Bears, I'm kind of just hoping that Justin Fields sucks. Allen Robinson's the man, but outside of them, I don't think their offense is really much better. And our coaching staff seemed to think that a lot of our team just played like slow and looked out of place last year. So I don't know. I'm just thinking we're a lot closer just based on the rest of the division. Not so much us, but if we're in a bad division, kind of like the NFC East last year or the NFC South was, you know, 6-7 years ago, how soon is it until we're an actual competitor within our division?
That's a good question. I mean, a couple weeks ago we all had a nice argument for each team potentially being the leader in the clubhouse for the NFC North this year if Aaron Rodgers gets traded. When can we talk about the Lions being a contender? Because that was the one team that we said probably wasn't going to contend for the division this year. But how soon could the Lions contend for the NFC North? Let's start with you, Ryan.
It seems like the answer should be next year, right? Like, with the way that football kind of just the parity, I think you see so many teams that go from worse to contending in their division. Like, I think that it's plausible. By the way, like Dalvin Cook being the Vikings only offense, Justin Jefferson in his 88 catches and 1400 yards would like a word with you, sir.
My bad.
I think I'm with you. Like, you know, if I hate saying it because I feel like the more that we talk about it, the less that it's likely to happen. But like if Rodgers does leave the division, it really opens things up. I think at that point you can really say that like any team, you know, depending on the wackiness of the season, 17 game schedule. I mean, let's kind of see what happens. But I think as far as a realistic timeline, like, you know, big things happen this offseason. You know, trading your franchise quarterback is a big thing to do. And I don't know. Like, maybe I'm drinking a little bit of the Kool-Aid saying that they could be contenders by next season. What do you guys think?
I'm going to go back to the terrific series from Justin Rodgers in his interview with Brad Holmes. And they talked about the fact that of using the word retool versus rebuild. And Holmes insisted on using the word retool because he said, if you're rebuilding, you're not planning on being a winner now, and we're trying to be a winner now, right? And I do think that speaks to the fact that they think they can be competitive this year while they are rebuilding or retooling the roster. And so next year, I think, is very plausible. And I think they think that as well. They think that, you know, if they were just going to blow the whole thing up, which they kind of did, you know, maybe they'd be more apt to say it's a rebuild. But the word choice and the way that Brad Holmes explained why he's picking that word choice speaks to the fact that they want to be competitive now, and they're expecting to be, and they think it's going to be sooner rather than later that they are going to be, you know, in the mix and things. And so in the NFL, I tend to agree with him that, you know, it doesn't take much for teams to, you know, turn things around quickly. It, you know, we've said this in prior podcasts, that the separation between the best team and the worst team isn't as great as we think it's, you know, in the NFL, because there's just such good parity. So, yeah, next year, I'm with you, Ryan. I think next year is plausible for sure.
I actually think I'm with you guys as well, and not to drum Justin Rodgers' horn, you know, drum too much, but the thing, I've seen him compare the Lions a lot of times to the Dolphins 2 years ago when they went through that huge kind of rebuild. They traded a bunch of their players and built up draft capital, and we all thought they were going to go 0-16 that one season, right? Like, they started off 0-7 or something. They were really, really bad. Then they go on and you know, they win like 6 out of the last 8 games or something like that. Like, they go on a nice streak, and then what happens next year? They go 10-6. Like they end up still missing out in the playoffs, but they went 10-6. Like they were contenders in their own division that year. And yeah, I think that's to me what I'm really going to be looking for this season. And fans are going to hate it if it happens in a similar fashion, right? Like if they see this team go 0-7, like there'll be a little bit of frustration, but I think there might be more excitement that's like, oh, we're about to get another top five pick. And then they go off and rattle a bunch of wins. That would make them mad. But to me, that would be extremely promising if we see that improvement as the season goes on. And, you know, the schedule does lighten up a little bit in the second half as well. So it might kind of naturally go that way anyways. But if there's improvement towards the end of last year and this team is competing against good teams, maybe even beating a couple good teams, then yeah, I'm with you guys. I think we could really see that turnaround happen in just the season.
And I know it was 4 years ago, but to Eric's point about, you know, kind of the roster turnover, you know, the comment that Darren Fells made about like the players that are still on the team from that 2017 team, there's only three of them. Mm-hmm. And two of them are primarily special teamers, and Jalen Reeves-Maybin and the Mule. So it's there's a lot of changeover, and Brad Holmes really scorched earth in a similar fashion as to I mean, if you want to take a look at the Pistons, like Troy Weaver came in as their general manager and just changed everything. So, but yeah, I'm excited for football.
Guys are killing me. I expected you guys to like pour out some of the Kool-Aid for me because I'm all amped up. I'm down here in Florida and I'm always defending my Lions against all my buddies and Bucks fans and all that. So this isn't helping. But seriously, like I think we have a shot. I think we're closer than it may look. It's exciting. I'm excited for next year. You know.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's June. If we're not drinking the Kool-Aid now, when do we ever get to have some Kool-Aid?
Fair.
It's a good point.
All right, Dom, appreciate the question. Sorry we weren't able throw a wet blanket on you there. Thank you, appreciate that. Let's go to Leo next. Leo, are you there?
Hey, yeah, I'm here, guys. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yep.
Hey, guys, I haven't heard anybody really talk about Pennacini, and I'm a big Pennacini guy. Oh, we're having breakfast here at our household.
No worries.
Yeah, so I just want to hear a little bit about Pennacini. I think he is a strong piece, whether or not, you know, he has the athleticism or not. I just think that that guy has developed from sixth-round pick to, you know, to going through two guys, it seems like, every single week. So just any updates there from what you guys have seen, and how do you see him kind of being incorporated into the defense?
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm not gonna lie, it's tough to say really anything meaningful from minicamp since there's no contact, and you know that is maybe the most contact driven position on the team. But obviously the drafting of Aleem McNeil complicates things for him, so I'm curious as to what you guys think. We'll start with you, Eric. What do you think Pennacini, I mean, is there a role for him this year? Do the Lions keep up a backup nose tackle?
Yeah, I think they do.
Yeah,
I think when you are looking at this scheme, both on offense and defense, you're going to need guys that can play more than one spot, or you're going to need more than one player at each of the spots as well. So, while Pennacini's role, I think, will be scaled back from what it was in the last year, I think he was more like pushed into action because of injuries, and there's potential there. But yeah, I think McNeil's going to be the first, you know, nose tackle off the bench, but Pennacini will have an opportunity to get in if they're going to keep, you know, six down defensive linemen. I do think he's one of those six.
You feel the same way, Ryan?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Eric makes a good point about, you know, Pennacini getting, you know, kind of pushed into the lineup due to injuries and things like that. But even with that, with Sanding, one of my favorite things that I saw about Pennacini that came across the timeline was from the Pro Football Focus Lions Twitter account. And it mentioned, you know, most defensive snaps played by rookie defensive interiors in 2020. John Pennacini was second, only behind Derek Brown from Carolina. Wow. Played more snaps than Javon Kinlaw, played more snaps than Raekwon Davis. I think he's a guy who has – I think he has a future with the Lions, and I think that he's one of those promising young pieces that the Lions have in the fold.
Yeah, he played some three technique last year too, which is going to help him in this scheme in order to be, you know, positionally versatile when they're not using a nose tackle. He can still spot, you know, some snaps at a different position as well. So, look, if McNeil goes down, what's your game plan for the nose? Is it Nick Williams? Because you can't move Brockers. You're not going to move Levi. It's not going to be Hand or Kevin Strong or Cornell. Like, you need a nose because it's a valuable catalyst in this defense. And McNeil, if he isn't as unable to play, you need a guy like Pennicini on this roster.
I also think the other thing is that he allows them to go down into their 40 front, because I think McNeil, you can kind of, you know, you could put him, yes, at the one or at the zero, but you can move him to the three. You can move Brockers, you know, because there's so much versatility now on the defensive line, where you're still going to kind of need somebody kind of, you know, shade the center, and I just think that he's a bigger piece than what maybe it feels like that's out there.
Yeah, I mean, he's quite literally a bigger piece, and yeah, I think probably metaphorically as well. I think a lot of that stuff might be cleared up in the first couple weeks of training camp when the guys put the pads on and we see them, you know, actually hit each other and see maybe some of the formations, because you also realize, like, they're not doing any team activities. We're not really seeing them line up even, because 7-on-7s, those are the guys that are off the field. But definitely, again, something that we'll be looking forward to when camp starts in a little bit over a month. Thanks for the question, Leo. Appreciate you joining the show. We're going to try to run through these last five guys as quick as possible, because we're running up against it. So let's bring on Nathan. Nathan, welcome back to the show. Are you there, Nathan? There you are. Maybe?
Guys, can you hear me?
Nate, D-O-double-G.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you.
I got a question for you. Hopefully y'all don't have the same answers, because it's going to be disappointing if you do. Okay, so I'm going to ask y'all to channel your inner MCDC going into training camp. What is your number one position battle and why?
Ooh, who wants to start? Who's got a good one?
I'll go. It's got to be CB1, right? I think yeah. That's the most.
Or two. Just like two, who's right? The two? Yeah, who's the starting two?
Yeah, who's the guy on the left? Who's the guy on the right? But yeah, it's I think there is probably the most interesting camp battle that I'm looking forward to. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take the other. Defensive secondary battle and say Marlowe versus Harris. It's been Harris getting the snaps with the ones, but Marlowe's the guy with the most experience. And I still think there's a role for him, even if it's just like when they go to the three safeties on the field. So yeah, the strong safety battle, who starts next to Tracy Walker, that I think is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like all the interesting battles are happening on defense, because the only ones I'm thinking on the offensive side of the ball is like maybe slot receiver, maybe depth beyond that at receiver, maybe. I mean, if you want some backup quarterback talk, there might be a backup quarterback camp battle, but not my cup of tea in particular. I would say, you know, linebacker. We mentioned it earlier. Who are going to be those off ball guys? I think. During camp, it was mostly Anzalone and Jamie Collins, but is it possible we see someone? How quick do we see Derek Barnes, you know, get meaningful reps with the first or second team? All those things are interesting to me. And then obviously the Jelani Tavai wild card is in there as well. I would assume that it's probably Anzalone's and Collins' job to keep, and my guess is they do keep it, but I wouldn't be completely surprised to see one of those guys kind of overtake him.
So mine would be right guard. Who's going to win the right guard spot? Yeah, I think it's open.
It might be. I don't know. I feel like fans think it might be more open than it is. I don't think they have an issue with Vitae. But again, like, I can't say I've seen anything in particular at OTAs or minicamp because, again, no contact. So I can't say, wow, Vitae's looked really good and comfortable. Like, we'll have to wait and see on that. But I guess with the way they were using the reps makes me think Vitae's pretty safe. But maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think he's safe, too. I'm with you. I when we got a chance to look, you know, at the drills, like, he was with those starters. He was walking with those starters. Like, those starters tend to move as a pact, right?
Right.
Because and he was always moving with that pact. And, you know, his movement looked good. He looked healthy. And I think the coaches are a lot more comfortable than most people think.
Who's behind Vitae?
Exactly.
Again, maybe that's the battle we should be looking at. Who's going to be back to Vitae? Because we know that dude probably will get hurt at some point in the season. I hate to say it.
Well, Crosby, Nelson, Stenberg, those are your guys that are probably your next up. I think Kramer's a little bit further down the pecking order.
Yeah, then the one thing I would just add to the conversation is offensive line. That's kind of the position where you want those guys in where they're going to be as soon as possible, right? You want to develop that chemistry as early in the offseason as possible, and you really don't see a lot of movement. I think last year was definitely a bit of an oddity in that, you know, injuries and all sorts of moving pieces had to happen right at the end of training camp, and it caused us to even go into the regular season be like, where is everyone going to play? That's not usually what you're trying to do with the offensive line, and I think the Lions are not set with their top five, but pretty comfortable with where it's at right now.
In the drills that we witnessed, I took notes on who was lining up next to who. Mm-hmm. Every time the starters lined up, it was the exact same guys at the exact same spots. The only guys they showed movement with were the reserves.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. Good work as always. And we'll talk to you on next Saturday.
All right. Sounds good, Nathan. Let's keep going with Dan. Dan is on the show. How you doing, Dan?
I'm good. You can hear me okay, yeah?
Yep.
Okay. No pauses this time, thank God. I wanted to ask you about the wide receivers, because it's interesting. I was reading a few things, even a few, I think it was Jeff Risden did his comments about the OTAs and stuff. And it's interesting because we're sort of having to, like, Stafford going to Goff, it seems like we're losing a bit of that panache and longer throws and stuff like that. And it seems to me that our wide receivers are sort of, they're very different, aren't they? You know, we have the two with speed, but I was hearing a little bit that maybe Perriman isn't clicking as well, but, you know, obviously early days. But it seems that almost like when we're going through the draft and talking about Kyle Pitts, it's like catchers. We're not talking about wide receivers. We're talking about our catchers, because we've got the two running backs. We've got the tight end. And so I'm just curious about how many wide receivers do you think will make the 53? Thanks.
I know Ryan paid attention to that question because you mentioned Kyle Pitts. So let's go to Ryan first.
Kyle Pitts, my favorite player, who is not a Detroit Lion. I don't know. I think that you really have to see training camp play out, right? Like, I think that, Dan, you mentioned it, you know, Perriman maybe not clicking the way that fans would be hopeful that he would be clicking right from the jump. But, I don't know. I'm really interested in Tyrell Williams. I think that what we've seen out of him over the course of his career has been a very productive receiver. So I think that him getting an opportunity to be a true number one and coming here in Detroit, which I think everybody's really quick to say, you know, Hockenson's going to lead the team in targets and receptions, and you know, he's going to catch a bunch of touchdown passes, and he's going to be Goff's favorite target. And, you know, while a lot of that may be true, I think that a lot of people are kind of overlooking Tyrell Williams, and I think it's kind of easy, low hanging fruit for a lot of media to kind of take pot shots at the Lions wide receiver room, just because there is so much changeover and whatnot. And I'm just in on Tyrell Williams. I don't know. Where are you guys stand on him?
I like Tyrell Williams. I mean, you saw it in some of the pictures that came out of minicamp this week. Like, that guy can go up and get it. And I, I kind of concur with some of the other things that are being said about Breshad Perriman. I just didn't see it out of him in the past couple weeks. But I saw flashes of Tyrell Williams. Not a ton, but flashes. And part of that is, I mean, the Lions did a lot of goal line work over these past 2 weeks, past 3 weeks. And that's just not his specialty. That's not where he's going to make his money. Right. Yeah. And so it's tough to be completely judgmental of, I guess, you know, how quiet both guys really were. But I do like him. To me, and maybe this goes back to the camp battle question, I think one of the more fascinating kind of questions of who's going to win out a spot is with the kick returner spot. Because Khalif Raymond and Victor Bolden are probably your one and two in going into training camp. And we heard a lot about Victor Bolden this week, right? And for good reason. The guy was making some acrobatic catches. The guy's quick. He's creating a little bit of separation there. But Khalif Raymond has consistently gotten those kind of first team special teams reps, which makes me think maybe they still believe he's the guy to beat. And so, I don't know. Like, I in terms of if we're talking about 53-man roster, you know, there's at least three or four guys that are locks, right? You've got Tyrell, you've got Perriman, you've got Amonra, and then you probably have Quintus Cephas. Maybe I guess I would put him in there for four. And now what are we talking about? Five is probably either Khalif or Victor. I can't imagine they pick both. But then, like, I was having this conversation the other day. Who backs up the outside guys? Who are those outside receiver depth guys? And I don't know if there's really one that stood out to me during minicamp. What about you, Eric?
So I want to mention with Perriman, he was the one that showed up first in OTAs when Tyrell Williams wasn't. Williams showed up more in minicamp, but Perriman really was showing up in OTAs. But like you said, that was when they were doing 7-on-7s with more open field, and that's more into his skill set. I agree with you that Perriman and Williams are locked in on the outside. St. Brown is your slot. They're probably going to want a shifty slot as well, which means that's the Raymond Bolden battle. I agree with you that Cephas is well ahead as like that big slot option who can also play on the outside. Cephas, Allison, Surratt are all those guys, and I think Cephas is also in there. So I'm agreeing with you on those first five. Those all make sense. Radley seemed to be the guy that was learning the most, and I would put him ahead, but it wouldn't surprise me to see UDFA Jonathan Adams challenge him for that spot as well. I think he's the one that's had the best reps on special teams. He's shown a little bit of a good value in the 7-on-7s with the kind of a back end reserves more than the other UDFAs, in my opinion. So, you know, the Radley Adams battle, the Raymond Bolden battle, those seem like those are going to be the hot ones for rounding out the wide receiver room.
And we know Damian Ratley had at least one first team rep in walkthroughs because he bumped noggins with Jeff Okuda. Right. So maybe that's a good sign.
He also had that touchdown pass right in front of us on Tuesday. True. Where he almost, 5 feet over to his right and he would have run us over. It was a nice touchdown.
Well, all right, Dan.
Thanks very much. There's some other football going on in the world over in Europe, actually. Den Hurts and Vikings are going to fight in about half an hour. So I want to thank you guys and hope you guys have a very great weekend. Cheers.
Thanks. Appreciate that, Dan. All right, I'm going to tell you guys what you're going to do. We're going to wrap up the podcast right now as we're well over the hour mark. But if you're here live on the Locker Room app, we'll do a tiny bit of overtime. I actually have a pretty tight schedule here, so we're going to get out of here as quick as possible. But if you're listening on the podcast, we appreciate you. Thank you for joining us. If you want to join us live next time, make sure you download the Locker Room app. But until next time, it's chaos. Be kind.